It's a Cartoon Revolution. I'm Deidre.
And I'm Sonia.
Why Cartoon Revolution?
Because the cartoons we love aren't just for kids anymore.
Cartoons have something to say and change to inspire, and we're here to break it down for you.
Whether it's anime or Pixar, 2D or CG.
Join us as we take cartoons too seriously and discover their hidden meanings and revolutionary ideas.
Hi, welcome back to our second episode.
Hi, we're going to be talking about something really exciting today. And Sonia, you picked this topic. So why don't you tell everyone what you chose?
Mm-hmm. So today we're talking about Steven Universe. For those of you who don't know, or maybe haven't seen the show in a while, Steven Universe is about a young boy named Steven who is half gem, half human. And he is really good friends with the Crystal Gem and is part of Crystal Gems, including Pearl, Amethyst, and Garnet. And they are charged with maintaining the peace and keeping Beach City safe, especially from the threats of Homeworld, which is where the gems are originally from. And yeah, it's an adventure coming of age story about these characters.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically people and intergalactic gems
fighting. Yeah. Wow. That was so hard to summarize.
Working together. It's a complex show.
There's so much going on. But anyways, watch it because it's wholesome, it's beautiful, and it also has a lot of really good songs, which is really important to me. I love the songs. Mm-hmm. Fun fact, I don't really know how this started, but my friends at some point in college started calling me Garnetia because I loved Garnet so much. I feel like there was some origin story to it, but I don't remember. But anyways, my friends called me Garnetia, and that just is a really good indicator of what this show means to me and also how much it meant to me in college, because it really, I think, got me through it. It was just the perfect distraction escapism show for me, which I really needed when I was really stressed. Before I shared the topic specifically, Deidre, did you have any experience with Steven Universe that you want to share? Or how do you feel when I introduce the word Steven Universe to you?
What did you say it was? Garnetia?
Yeah, Garnetia. It's Garnet and Sonia.
I like that. I like it. I think it works than some other couple names I've heard, you know, just floating around celebrity gossip panels or whatever. But anyway, so for Steven Universe, this is, I think, like on a personal connection. I'm not sure that I had so much of a tie to it, as opposed to just being amazed at how different this show was, considering what else was coming out around the time. And just like why Avatar, I think, stood out to the both of us, is just at the time that those shows started coming out, there wasn't a lot like it. Yeah, so that's why it stood out to me. It's just fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that really connects well to the topic for today, which is gender expression, relationships, and family structures. That's what I think is most groundbreaking about Steven Universe, is that it changes so much of what we traditionally know about cartoons. So I think, like, for example, when I reflect on children's shows that I watched growing up and what was kind of offered to us, it was kind of an interesting time. So we're talking about like the early 2000s, right? So it's kind of an interesting time because I feel like that's when you had still like boys and girls shows. You had Sailor Moon was a girl show. You had like Kim Possible, which was a girl show. You had all of these like Powerpuff Girls. But with the boy side, you had maybe like grosser versions of that. Like you had like Ed, Edd n Eddy, I remember. And then there was things like, of course, like the DC shows. Like those were the shows that boys were encouraged to watch, and then girls were encouraged to watch other shows. But then there are all these other great shows that started coming out as well, like Teen Titans and of course Avatar The Last Airbender, where no one, you know, no matter what your gender, everyone loved those shows. And so I feel like we're starting to see that trend become the norm now. And that really enters the Steven Universe as well, targeting kids of all kinds and showing boys and girls specifically taking on character traits that you wouldn't ordinarily see maybe boys have or girls have.
Yeah, so I agree. I think there was, with a lot of the shows, especially coming out, I think, in the 90s, where we started to see more women and more female characters in the shows being represented. It was like, oh, cool, girls are in here, girl power. But it wasn't really a fully fleshed representation where there was a lot of diversity in how these stories were told. I mean, we think about some of the shows that you mentioned, like Powerpuff Girls and Kim Possible, and those were really great stepping stones of the time in order to get us where we are at the moment. But in terms of like how these characters are as people and how their own stories evolve the way that human relationships evolve, like that wasn't quite there yet. And that was really interesting to see in the show, especially with how that kind of plays around with what is traditionally a male cartoon show and what is a women's cartoon show, or even like Teen Titans, like you mentioned, that attracted both male and female audiences, was still, you know, not just heteronormative, but also still quite masculine as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is a good way to introduce Steven to as a character and how he really represents a lot of these shifts and also just a deeper complexity when it comes to gender and also a coming of age story. So I think what you're saying about there being girls and boys shows, but also feminist shows being kind of limiting is really true, in the sense that like a lot of times it was about maybe fashion or some like Totally Spies, for example, or there's some like girl power nature to it. And like, that's their thing, is like girl power specifically. So it is very, I guess, feminist in a sense that there's girl power, but it's also limiting because what does a girl mean? It doesn't mean like lipstick, guns, and like high heel sabers or whatever. There's a lot more to it than that. And that's where I think Steven is so exciting as a character, because he is so empathetic, so kind, so sensitive. He has healing powers and defense powers, which are powers that we are often given to like female sidekick characters or support characters, like even Katara. So that's what's just so exciting about him, and seeing that sensitivity, that emotion display in a young boy, I think is so important for kids who watch the show.
Yeah. And that idea of an empathetic hero, yeah, is such a big deal. We don't really, I mean, up until this show, I can't really think of any big characters where they do the same, where that it wasn't considered a weakness, like you're being too weak for being too empathetic. And I guess we start to see this with Aang in Avatar, because he was called out for a lot of the show for being too soft, and in the end he was able to find a medium where he didn't have to kill the Fire Lord, and he was able to preserve his status of not being a murderer which is a big deal. But yeah, it's not I think sometimes we can take that for granted now looking at the shows that are out, but these were, like I said, stepping stones.
Yeah, I kind of see Aang definitely as a stepping stone. I mean, really, he was a huge leap in a lot of ways, but I think the show didn't make that full commitment until Steven Universe came around. But yeah, you're right. Like the whole parallel between Aang not wanting to kill the Fire Lord is very similar to Steven's dislike of shattering gems, for example, and his ability to also turn a lot of villains into allies is also really kind of something we saw like a little bit of an Avatar, but was explored a lot more in Steven Universe, like Peridot, for example, even Lapis, kind of even Jasper a little bit towards the end, which a lot of these were, you know, long-term villains, like villains for full seasons and arcs, who then were turned to the hero side. So I think it's so important to see that. And it really makes me feel good that younger kids are watching this, because really cartoons have such a large role in socializing us as we age and as we grow up. And one of the biggest ways they socialize us is through gender. I played with like Barbie dolls. I watched the Barbie movies. I watched, you know, all of those Sailor Moon and Powerpuff Girl shows, and I loved them. But my brother would kind of, you know, have a different reaction. He would pretend not to like them, but would actually like them too. I remember him, you know, thinking, I'm not going to watch your Barbie movie with you. Like, that's so silly. I'm a boy. I'm going to go, you know, watch Beyblade or something. I don't even know if that's a show or a toy. But anyways, he would secretly watch, like he would enjoy, he would pretend to be doing something else, but he would watch those shows. And that is just so sad that we have those bifurcations in, you know, in our young lives. And I'm so glad that it's not the norm anymore. And I really do think Steven Universe is part of that.
Yeah. And I in preparation for this episode, I read an article. It was a conversation in Paper Magazine interviewing Rebecca Sugar and Noelle Stevenson, who are the heads and the minds behind Steven Universe and She-Ra, Princesses of Power, respectively. And the article was written by Matt Meon, M-E-O-N. And they talk about the importance of that representation, since both these people identify as queer, and Rebecca Sugar identifies as both bisexual and non-binary, using she, her, they, them pronouns. yeah, this conversation was really interesting because they talked about how there's like a long history of like this moral code that if you're going to join this major network and you're going to have a TV show, you need to abide by certain rules and standards that were set, looks like 1930s, like really early on. And they, in order to be able to have the shows that they ended up putting out, first it took the work of a lot of other shows prior to that, but also it's not like the company executives said like, oh, you can have this now, you can tell these stories now. Like, these people had to really work their way around, and part of that was using intergalactic characters and like non-human characters as a way to discuss very human topics. And they did have to beat around the bush a bit, as a lot of other projects and movies have been labeled as like queer coding and queer baiting for so long, especially with Disney, we've seen that. Here they were finally able to do it in a way where eventually they garnered so much support that the executives had to give the green light. And that's like working from the inside, but also from the outside.
Yeah, I think that touches on something that's really important, which is the difference between coding as representation and representation as representation. Because there's definitely a lot of coding that happens in a lot of shows where it's kind of like subtly implied. And anyone who's maybe of that identity, whether it's, you know, same-sex relationship that they're observing or the way that something is racialized, if you're of that identity, maybe you can read it that way. But it's kind of a personal identification between the viewer or the reader and the actual content. But then representation, like, I feel more deeply engages with the material and the inequalities that exist in the construction of that material. And I feel that Steven Universe does a good job of kind of negotiating those two different things, because you're right in that, you know, they're not like gay, you know, they're not like throwing the word out there on Steven Universe, but you can see how they put a lot of thought into making sure that non-binary people can read themselves easily in the show. Like, even with Stevani, for example, the Steven Connie fusion, he always uses us or they, them pronouns when referring to themselves. And that's a really good example. And also just the way that Pearl's love for Rose is really obvious through song and through dialogue, but it's not so in your face that people will think, oh, this is like trying to be all political or trying to make some message. Of course, there are people who will always think that they are, who will always protest these themes, but I think it's done in a way that's very well thought out and well planned. And it does remind me also of Korra Nasami from Legend of Korra. That was just, you know, the ending of that show was amazing. The fact that that could happen, I mean, it blew my mind. And this was not even that long ago that Korra Nasami kind of, it was implied that they fell in love at the end. But what's interesting is that they never confirmed it explicitly and they only held hands. And when you read what the creators have to say about it, they confirm it, you know, offline, but not in the show. And they talk a lot about how it was very unprecedented and how it was very difficult for them to negotiate between how clear they wanted it to be and, you know, appeasing network executives and, you know, societal standards at the time.
Yeah, I remember when that episode came out, because they finished holding hands while they went through, I guess, like the portal it was called, I can't even remember. And then, yeah, it was implied. But did you ever watch the video of them actually kissing? Because that was released on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if that's official or if it's fan-made.
It might be fan-made, but yeah. Who knows?
I know. It's so true, though. Like, sometimes that's what people need. I don't know. It's so nice to have something, like, clear and overt like that. Like, it's kind of sad to always exist representation-wise, like, between the lines and through implication only. And so I'm glad that it's becoming more and more overt. Like, you can see Pearl is in love with Rose. It's so obvious. Other things like that in the show, I mean, just Stevani's existence in general, it's really groundbreaking. And I hope that it continues and we'll have more and more shows like that.
It is important, right? I think it's easy, I guess. So from my perspective, growing up, I missed a lot of those cues. I would miss on a lot of things in TV shows, like, oh, these characters are picking up, or you know, like that my friends would talk about, and I just didn't see it at all. And so for me, that wasn't something that was really in the forefront of my mind. But having friends who really questioned it and would come to me and say, hey, did you see this movie? Like, these two main characters are totally together. They didn't say it, but they totally had the hots for each other. They're giving each other googly eyes or whatever. in the moment, I was always like, oh, okay, sure. Like, I don't know. But at the same time, like, it's, there's a thirst for that, you know, especially for people who identify so much with not being represented in traditional media. And it's important to spell it out, because this is how we are able to, like, name the humanity in a lot of these characters. And there has been, I was reading, again, like, more several articles, but there was some criticism about how, for the Stefani character, that it was never implicitly stated that she was they were non-binary, and that they needed to, like, outwardly say it, even beyond just using pronouns. And how unjust it was that characters who are not even human are being labeled as being part of these complex relationships that are actually happening in the human experience. And which I think is all fair. I think it's also, like, having this discussion between the two of us, it's also just understanding how much of that is restraint from the higher ups and the corporate ladder, and how that really shapes the final product that we get to see.
That is so true. And it's sad that we'll never know fully to what extent limitations were imposed from, you know, a network or executives on the actual creators. Like in the case of Avatar, like, we don't know for sure how much the creators wanted to show about Korra and Asami, and how much they felt the need to obfuscate it or make it more implied rather than explicit. And a lot of that negotiation is not just from networks as well, but also how society or the audience will respond, especially if you are creators who maybe don't identify as the relationship or character you're trying to portray. So I feel that there's a lot of pressure to do it well. And sometimes that may cause creators to just avoid it entirely, or kind of show a lot of restraint with it rather than embracing it fully.
Do you know what I actually watched in preparation for this episode?
What?
I'm not sure if you saw it. It was Cartoon Network released some PSAs, and this was anti-racist PSAs.
Oh,
and Steven Universe did some, like, I think four different
I
PSAs.
Think I remember seeing that. Was this around Stop API Hate or Black Lives Matter, maybe?
It probably was Black Lives Matter. Yeah, because they focus more on anti-Black racism. Yeah, racism towards Black people. And there was one that was with Amethyst. I don't know if you remember that one. It was like two kids and Amethyst, and they're coming up with this skit to talk about anti-Blackness, Black sentiment. And basically this, like, this white kid is like, some, I don't know, blah, blah, blah. You guys can watch it online, but, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm white and she's Black. And then Amethyst is like, I'm purple. And they're like, so treat us the same, you know? And then Amethyst cuts the tape and she's like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm not even human. You can't just put me in here and say that because I'm purple, I'm, like, the same as this girl, these two children who are genetically, you know, of the same species, but just happen to have different skin tone and come from, like, different like ethnic backgrounds. Like, that's not fair to say because everyone else notices that I'm purple and that she's Black and that she's white. Yeah, I just really like that PSA. It's 1.5 minutes. You can look it up. Just Steven Universe PSA. Yeah.
I remember seeing that. It was obviously so long ago, and as with the pandemic, my memory is gone for most of it. But that is super cool that they did that, and I hope it was well received and effective in some way. I only wish, of course, that more of those messages could be imbibed, you know, in the show, maybe more explicitly. But then, of course, people just are also easily upset by that when it comes to children's content, and I can definitely see the Karens coming out of the wild and saying, you know, what are you showing my children? So one day we'll find a way.
Yeah. And I kind of bring that up too, because Amethyst's character just calls out the director for saying, like, you're trying to tell people not to notice characters about us that we're proud about and that are some of the first things you notice about us. And by doing that, you're making it easier on yourself to avoid talking about these issues when everyone else in the room knows this is a white girl, this is a Black girl, this is a boy, this is a girl. And so that's why I feel like we can bring that into the gender discussion a little more as well, because even the idea of masculine and feminine stands out when we're just, like, out in the world. Like, this person looks more masculine, this person looks more feminine, but it's society's lens that tells us this must be a man, this must be a woman.
Yeah, and I think that's something that Steven Universe does really well, in that they build kind of a distinction between change versus not change, in the sense that with Homeworld / the Gem Empire, they have very rigid roles in terms of what a gem should be doing and who they should fuse with. And it's very obviously imperial and colonial. You only fuse with a gem of your, I guess, caste. It's kind of like a caste system of your caste or role. And you only really associate with them. There's a clear hierarchy and order to who you're supposed to be, who you're supposed to report to. And then you have, I think it's called like the off colors who appear, I think it's season 4 or season 5. But those who don't fit in, their fusions, they're kind of broken in some way, they don't fulfill their role. There's even one that I think is supposed to represent a polyamorous relationship. I forget her name. But and then I think some conjoined gems. Anyway, it's a really interesting episode. But you can see that the distinction between that imperial world and Earth, where these gems are much more comfortable changing. They change themselves with each, every time they shatter, they change themselves when they fuse. They fuse with different, I guess, castes or types of gems, and are just much more free and happy and kind than the gems that we see in the colonial world. And that kind of does parallel traditional societal structures and what we're seeing now, which is a more free world in which people associate with different people. People are more comfortable changing themselves and being more fluid. And that's what we also see Rose's kind of decision to create Steven comes from, and that she finds human beings to be really beautiful because they're able to change and grow, which is something that gems aren't naturally inclined to. And so in a sense, with all of this, like Steven's creation or birth is in a sense representing that change in philosophy or that willingness to embrace change and growth, which I think is very inextricable from gender and gender expression in the show.
I guess that begs the question, where, since you touched on Rose Quartz as like the mother figure, because she, or I mean, in the show she's referred to as she being Steven's mother. How do you feel like, can you like maybe flesh out that idea of her being this, like what her choice to give birth to Steven and have this partnership and her relationship, that significance?
I think it comes from, I think the episode is called Straight to Video, where Steven finds, he enters Rose's world, the pink line world, and he finds a video that Rose left. It's a video of Rose and Greg at the beach, and you can see that she's pregnant. She and Greg have made the decision to, I guess, create Steven, which is a very weird concept. I still don't fully understand how it worked, but essentially she has to give up her own life and form in order to create Steven. But she says, concurrently, she talks about why she finds Earth and humanity to be really beautiful. And I believe the line is something like, humans have this ability to change and grow, which is something that gems aren't inclined to do naturally. Yeah, so I think that theme of change is where I see a parallel between Steven's existence, because he was created out of Rose's love for humans and change and Greg, to the gems' newfound ability on Earth to embrace change and growth of their own, which had always been denied to them on homeworld. Yeah, it's just a very interesting topic, I guess, and something that I think is very unique, especially with having this mother figure so omnipresent in the show, having inspired so many characters and being a source of a lot of confusion on Steven's part. I think it's something you rarely see in cartoons. Usually it's the father figure that is the source of like so much mystery and confusion and existentialism, like in Star Wars, of course. But it's great that in the show we have a son fearing or wondering about a mother figure, which is really unique.
Yeah, and just to cut back into something you said earlier, it's the father figure, is that most of the time he dies a gruesome death is the other thing.
Right. And this is like a mother's death, is like a sacrificial mother's death almost. Like, she gave her life to create Steven. That's like kind of beautiful. And it's like so much more dramatic and important, I feel, than the same narrative over and over of the absent father that we always witness in these shows.
Yeah, because her influence and her legacy lives on in so many different characters, as opposed to Rose actually being physically present, and yet she's there. You learn about Rose Quartz, I think season 1, as a character that has holds a lot of reverence, or other characters have a lot of reverence for.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, you're right. I really like how you mentioned that her legacy touches a lot of people. Whereas in these, just, you know, the angst that we see from teenage boy characters like Luke Skywalker, for example, or other similar characters with father figures and father legacies, it's much more personal, I feel. Actually, a really good example, I don't know if you've ever seen the anime Hunter x Hunter, but the whole...
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Okay. The whole show is about this boy who's trying to find his father, right? And be like him. He becomes a hunter. And there's an opportunity in this show. I think it's some, I forget, phone call, audio file or something that happens where the father tells Gon, the main character, and asks him, if you want to know about your mother, like, you can, like, press this button or something like that. And Gon chooses not to. He doesn't care about his mother. Like, it's not important for him to know because he only cares about his father. I think it's, the reasoning is because he finds, like, his aunt to be, like, a mother figure to him. But it frustrated me so much because I was like, why don't you care about your mom? Like, why don't moms get like more of a story in these shows? What, like, why do you care so much to this father who literally left you behind and abandoned you? I don't know what this is with fathers that we can't also have for moms who literally carry us and birth us and raise us, you know? Anyways, that was, I mean, that frustrated me to no end, but I'm glad to see that Steven has a mother who also has a legacy, who is important, who has a huge role and presence in this story, because mothers they're important.
it's funny because it's not only the male heroes in shows. I was just not too long ago as rewatching Kill la Kill, which I'm not sure. Yeah, you watch, and the main character is a heroine, and the story has a lot of female characters, but the justification for this whole story getting started is that her father dies and she's trying to find someone, the person who killed her father. And turns out the father was kind of like a scumbag anyway. So, but she cares so much. And turns out her mom was too. But yeah. Anyway, like parents, yeah. I guess, is what they're trying to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's some deep Freudian reason for why we're more obsessed with fathers than mothers in stories. But it perplexes me to no end how so often in these shows, the father is a subject of disappointment in the end. And it's the mother who's really labored and done the work of raising us and helping her story exist. So honestly, I feel we should have a lot more respect for them and just carry a lot more desire to know them than we do maybe our fathers. Who knows?
Who knows? Or both. Don't kill off the parents so quickly.
Yeah, no one should die.
So I think that actually is, since we're talking on the subject of parents, it's interesting too, because Rose Quartz, like we said, is gone, and she gave up her life to create this half of Steven. And so Steven doesn't have a mother that's present in raising him. And instead he has his father, who's still there, Mr. Universe, and the three gems that Steven lives with, Pearl, Garnet, Amethyst. And they make up, let's say, a non-nuclear family.
Yeah, like a found family.
A found family. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Coming together with a single purpose of raising this child.
Right. I really like that about the show as well. One of my favorite episodes is Fusion Cuisine, where Connie's parents want to meet Steven's parents, and Connie had lied to them and said that Steven was part of a nuclear family because she thought that her parents would respect or feel more comfortable with them if they were. And so Steven had the gems to fuse into one, and naturally it's a disaster because they just don't get along. It's not smooth, and it really makes no sense for Greg to be married to them. And it all falls apart and gets revealed. And then it turns out to all be okay because Connie's parents respect that they are protective of Steven and Connie. But I think it's so great because the show basically does celebrate that it's okay to not be part of a nuclear family, and that family really is what you make of it. And the only tie that you really need is love, just and you know, obviously mutual respect, care, and trust. All of these things are foundational to any healthy relationship. But it doesn't have to be a mother and a father who birth a child. That's absolutely not what's happening here. There's many types of families. There's many types of relationships in this show. And yeah, I think that's so important for this day and age, because the nature of families and family structures is changing a lot. It's no longer a nuclear family and is really just whoever you find that you, you know, love and trust and can care for.
Do you feel though that it's, I guess maybe we could say that it's like more this idealized version of family, because different types of families have always existed. And this idea of a two-parent household being the mother and the father and then the children is traditional, but also traditional in the sense of a very particular and I guess more Western viewpoint too, that kind of trickle down to a lot of other different cultures just by the nature of our history. To me, it's funny because I think it's less about a single change and more about the fluidity of our understanding of what a family is. And at its core, like this episode says, it's about care for the children and raising the child.
Yeah. No, I think that does relate a lot to even like with us, like I guess non-Western families, at least for me, like my family is huge and I consider like aunts and uncles and cousins to be like siblings and parents in a lot of ways. So you're right that it is interesting that the show kind of celebrates that kind of big family structure, which is still common in a lot of places and is actually not that unique, I suppose. But still, you're right that it is in the service of the next generation that families really enlarge in and like support like the child.
Yeah, it takes a village, as you might say,
to raise a especially child. With a half gem, half human thing.
Right, exactly. And the great thing I think about this show too is it just kind of shows how pretty much impossible it is to hide the true nature of things. You know, yeah. Like just thinking of how Alexandrite, like Stephen's solution to, or sorry, having to come in with his father and then only one of the gems was to actually bring in all of them. And it was a giant monster with multiple arms that was never going to like satisfy Connie's parents or like any other person who expected to see two parents, because what they're thinking is two humans, right? And it just showed like how kind of silly that was to begin with as a notion and how ultimately it wasn't even really about that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is kind of unrelated, but also related, but it relates to my favorite song in the show, which is Here Comes the Thought. It's the song where I think, yeah, Garnet is, it's called Mindful Education. I think Garnet is teaching Steven and Connie how to be Stevani and how to be like a healthy version of Stevani, and basically all about fusion and what it means to be in a healthy relationship that is stable, that acknowledges the past, that has a good future in mind. And I love that song because of the tune. Obviously, it's an amazing song. I love all the songs, but that one is so good. And I also love its content and the message that it brings forth. And I wanted to ask what your favorite song is.
Okay, I have a song in mind. That was one of my favorite songs. And I'm going to be like, maybe you can help me name it because I'm kind of kicking myself that I didn't double check the name. But it's the song in the Jailbreak episode where we learn that
Stronger Than You?
Yeah, Stronger Than
yes,
You.
Of yes, of course. Yes.
Yeah, that Ruby and Sapphire are the fusion that is Garnet. And I remember watching that and just getting chills up my arms. And
me too, of course.
And just, I drew something kind of like in celebration of that.
Oh my god!
Just because it was such a big moment for me personally to see that. And just because you kind of know the entire episode and you know you get hints of it before, but to like actually have that accumulation. And there was a line in the song that talks about how the relationship is all these different things, but ultimately it's a conversation. And I just really love that. And I think about that sentiment a lot. And yeah. I really love that song. I think we just like Garnet, Ruby, Sapphire
yes,
songs.
Of course. Yeah. No, fusion that reminds songs. Me, I think in the same episode, I think, or maybe it's a different one, but it has to do with Stevani and fusion. Garnet says to Stevani that you are not Connie, you are not Steven, you are an experience, which is kind of like conversation, which I really like that it implies that a relationship is always ongoing and that it's happening in the present. Like it's a conversation or an experience. It just, yeah, and again, it carries these messages of like change and metamorphosis and always putting putting like your energy and love towards maintaining and improving and growing something rather than accepting some kind of rigid rule or stasis that isn't in reality harmful. So I think the show does a lot for exploring healthy relationships as much as exploring gender, which I think is really important, as we've said multiple times, for kids. But yes, I love that song so much. It's so, I will sing it. I use it for like when I'm pumping myself up for like job interviews or just something stressful. I'll listen to that song and just kind of like, yeah, I'm stronger than you. Stronger than whatever is happening to me soon.
Even the song that you chose, like I had been playing it. I was watching that episode and my sister walked in and she's like, oh my gosh, can you play that song again? I love that song. And we're just listening to it together. Like this is just great music in general.
Yeah. And I like how, you know, your sister immediately knew it too. And I think that kind of to tie everything up together, it does indicate how much our generation loves this show. And it's definitely targeting kids. It's from Cartoon Network. They're 10-minute episodes. It's not something that I ever expected that I would fall into, but so many of my friends, so many people that I know this show and know the songs. And if I were to play it as well, you know, people would sing along. I have like this laptop sticker of Garnet on my computer. And when I'm around in public or when I'm meeting people for the first time, like people comment on it. And it's a good way of signaling, you know, that you're kind of a friendly, warm person who also loves cartoons. And it's just so amazing to see adults, like full grown adults, like love children's shows and feel really genuinely inspired by them. And I hope that it has that same effect on younger people and that it's helping them find healthy relationships or explore their gender or sexual orientation.
And even for people who don't identify as queer,
yeah.
I mean, I can only speak for myself. Is we're always in motion. We're always changing. And up until this point, yeah, I would say that I'm straight. But like there's to also put yourself in a box like that for your entire life is not really fair to the fluidity and the nature of and the complexity of who we are as people. And with that said, it's still important for those of us who do kind of fit that more conforming categories to be able to experience and talk about these things too, because hate against LGBTQIA+ people doesn't come out of nowhere, you know, and that includes other forms of discrimination is always a conversation that needs to happen. And it can't just happen between people for whom this affects the most or who are at the forefront, because that's just not fair to the conversation and to those people anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We're socialized to it and based on what we see. And a lot of what we see is mediatized. It's what we watch on television. Yeah, more shows like this need to happen to have, you know, share those conversations and experiences that highlight the human ability, as Rose observed, to change, to adapt, to grow, to embrace fluidity. Because you're right, like it's a message that applies to everyone, even if you're, you know, the whitest, straightest person who's never experienced discrimination in your life. Yeah, I'm sure even those people can benefit from understanding that your identity is fluid.
Yeah, and even on that note, in terms of representation in the show, like we've been focusing a lot on it being a queer show and talking about gender identity and relationships, but there's a lot of other representation that happens in this show as well, which I wanted to bring up a little bit. Like we talk about relationships being a conversation, and an example of an unhealthy relationship is the one that occurred between Lapis and Jasper.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think they're called Malachite.
I think so. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And even when Lapis finally exits that relationship, which started out of one, Jasper's need to like defeat the enemy and Lapis's need to redeem herself. So she entered that relationship on, what's the term? Deceitful terms? I don't even know if that's exactly the word, but anyway, it just...
Yeah, it's abusive. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when they split and she comes out of that, there's a representation of people suffering from domestic abuse and PTSD that comes from that. We see, like we mentioned, non-conventional families. I love amethyst and like smoky quartz as representations, not just of people who are chubby and fat, but also of people with disabilities or different abilities, I think is probably a better way to say it anyway. You know, just to skim the top of all these different ways that you could talk about this show, like we could talk about it more on different episodes about different topics.
I know. We could probably do one for every single type of identity honestly, because it really does a good job of covering all those bases. And it's not perfect. I mean, I've heard criticisms as well. Like some people say it doesn't go far enough. Some people say that Garnet, for example, is racialized in a way that's not beneficial, or even sexualized in a way that's not beneficial. So that is testament to how there are many different ways you can take the message. And that's part of the pitfalls of an implicit kind of representation. If you're not going to be overt about something, then people are going to assume different messages from what they're viewing, whether it's positive or negative.
Yeah, because there's a lot of, I mean, just looking at other shows, there's a lot of like beating around the bush or relationships that happen a lot later in the season. I mean, even
like off-screening something where like the characters will, there'll be some, you know, something that happens and then they come back and it's like, oh, we're together now or something like that. Like it's just, they'll come up with all kinds of ways to just hide something or make it implied without really doing the work of engaging with the material.
Yeah, and something overt that is natural in a relationship, like kissing, the fact that that was cut out of or wasn't allowed to happen on screen with Legend of Korra, which it only came out a few years ago, it's kind of an indication of that, because you can't also entirely blame the development team. But if that show hadn't happened, I don't think we would have gotten an on-screen kiss like with Luz and Amity from the Owl House, which was such a big deal as well, that hadn't really been shown before.
And yeah, absolutely. And
Ketra and Adora, I just wanted to mention.
Oh,
as well.
Yeah. Wait, did they kiss? I forget.
They do kiss in last season.
That is great.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, and a lot of people say like these shows are kind of, I would say, successors to Steven Universe. So maybe Steven Universe was kind of that bridge that we needed. I think Avatar was a shorter, smaller bridge than Korra, a bigger bridge than Steven Universe, another bridge. Maybe we finally reached that other continent where we'll just have these amazing stories with fully fleshed out explicitly and obviously like same-sex relationships or LGBT characters, all of that. Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm very interested to see the present and also the next few years, how that's going to start becoming more common.
Yeah, and I think it does seem to be trending that way.
Yeah, that reminds me of, I forget when, maybe it was the 1950s, I think, where there was some shift in blue becoming a boy's color and pink becoming a girl's color. And it used to be the other way around, where because pink was seen as like stronger and brighter and blue is more like dainty, it used to be that pink was a boy's color, which is interesting now because it's shifted. And so Steven Universe is now subversive because Steven's color is pink. But it's you're right. It just goes to show like how fake and made up so many of these rules are that we still follow to this day. Because you would never see any boy hero characters in shows, even just a decade earlier, being associated with pink. It's very rare. You would have it for, you know, characters in Totally Spies or Sailor Moon.
Oh, yeah. The pink Power Ranger had to be a girl.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And the yellow one at some point. I mean, they changed.
It was a girl. The black Power Ranger had to be a black dude. Yeah, anyway. But okay, that reminds me of a really funny memory that I have of, because I grew up with, I have two sisters, and one of them, she's only 15 months younger than me. And so we grew up like twins, and we would have pink and blue colored like clothes. And there was a certain point where I was always like, no, you can't wear that because pink is my favorite color. You have to wear the blue. And I was being bossy, and I always made her take my blue clothes. But then at a certain age, I was like, no, I like blue now, and you have to take the pink, and you get to be the girly girl, and I get to be the cool one.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I also had a shift where I would never wear pink, and I kind of still do, because like in high school and middle school, you know, when you start to really define your identity, I would never wear pink or even bright colors because I wanted to be cool. But at that time, I didn't realize that I thought that cool was more masculine. And so I would wear like darker colors. I wasn't quite emo, but I was like, you know, I was just edgy enough, you know,
you're
to
edgy,
be like,
you're
that.
Cool.
Right. And then like, even things like my favorite Powerpuff Girl, I think it changed from like Buttercup to what's the one? The green one.
The green one is Buttercup.
Oh, Blossom. It changed from Blossom to Buttercup because Buttercup was, I thought, was like cooler and more like dark, you know?
And which is all to say that this stuff is all,
it's all bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah. And, but again, it takes on such importance when we're kids. We will copy what we see on, you know, the TV screen. And so that's why I've said it multiple times, like, we need to have more care when it comes to what we're displaying on screen, because it does have a huge effect.
Yeah. And I think that's like a good point to bring up, because even this whole idea of what's appropriate for children, like, that's the American, okay, I'm not going to try to make it up, but basically there was this Hays Code or Hays Law that came out in 1934, which basically told all these, it was these network executives telling everybody, hey, you can't produce shows that would corrupt the minds of the American public. And maybe it was intended just to be for America, but because of the influence that America has on mainstream media, especially from that time period onward, it really trickled down to everyone else. And this is, I guess, like, soft power too.
Yeah, we're a cultural exporter, often to the detriment, probably, of other cultures.
Okay, so what about Easter eggs or hot takes? Is there anything you really want to talk about before we go?
Yeah, I was trying to think if I had any interesting hot takes, but I don't. This time it's going to be an Easter egg. I found for the first time, I had no idea, but apparently Garnet never asks questions in the entire show. That's like part of her thing. The writers intentionally did that. Maybe there's a few instances where they mistakenly had her ask a question in dialogue, but she, as far as I've ever observed, she never asks a question, which I think is so cool. Obviously, first of all, it's like celebrates her very like firm kind of character, like confident character. But there's also the fact that she has like future vision. Right, so in a sense, like, she doesn't need to ask too many questions because she can kind of answer those questions for herself with her abilities. But I just thought that was super clever. Like, you never would have like figured that out. There was never any explanation for it, as far as I'm aware. But it's just a subtle thing that's kind of indicative of the writer's craft that really celebrates her character.
Oh, I hadn't even
right.
I no definitely never noticed that.
Never.
I never noticed that. Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so for me, I guess it's not technically to do with like the show and more to do with Rebecca Sugar themselves. And with that said, Rebecca Sugar does have a significant other or a partner who is Ian Jones Quarty, who also worked on Steven Universe with her, with them. And they've been married for 12 years, which I just thought was really interesting as well. And
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah, it certainly maybe lends more weight to the amount of time the show places on healthy relationships and like how all of the characters have to really learn how to be good for one another, especially when they fuse or just fight together.
I'm glad that Sugar was able to present themselves so much in on a personal level, even though it's like it shouldn't be that important. But in terms of like the fullness of the show, why it felt so different, having her in the forefront was, and sharing that personal aspect was, I think, important, at least for other people to understand the show better.
Right. Yeah. And I think I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure like the inspiration for Steven was her own brother as well. So it does say a lot about her as a creator that she really put her personal self into the show. And I think the show is better for it, because when you play so much of yourself in it, there's just more effort you put into making sure it touches others' people's hearts as well, in my opinion.
Okay, so that wraps up our episode today. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And as you can probably tell from the rest of what we talked about, there's still so much more to talk about. And if you have ideas and thoughts, comments, you can email us at our Gmail account and also our Instagram. For now, that's those.
Yeah, we'd love to see what you guys have to share. But we also have good news. We are now available on, what is this, eight platforms. Wow.
Let's take turns. So you start.
Spotify.
Anchor.
Google Podcasts.
SoundCloud.
Stitcher.
CastBox.
Apple Podcasts.
And Breaker. And maybe one more, which we'll confirm later. We'll let you all know.
Thanks for joining us on Cartoon Revolution. Episodes drop the first week of every month on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and most other major podcast platforms.
Follow us on Instagram at cartoonrevolution.pod. That's cartoonrevolution.pod.
Tell us what you're watching and share your hot takes with us. Music is from The Musical Ghost. See you next time.
See you soon. Mwah.